It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Colon cancer rates among younger adults have skyrocketed in the past couple of decades. Dr. Richard Wender is going to try to explain why, or at least what we can do about it. He's the chief cancer control officer of the American Cancer Society. He oversees the organization's cancer control programs with a focus on access, navigation, and health equity. Dr. Wender, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
So I want to let people know that this is something that we want to hear from you about. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Are you dealing with colon cancer? Is somebody in your family dealing with colon cancer? Are you just afraid of why this is changing so much? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. So, Dr. Wender, why? That's the big question here. People who were born after 1960 are more likely to get colon cancer at a younger age than people who were born before. What's changed?
And I'd even expand that to say folks born even more recently in the 1980s and 90s appear to be at particularly increased risk as they age. That is the most critical question, and unfortunately it's one we don't have an answer to yet. We have a lot of candidate issues that we're looking at, but we don't have a definitive answer. Here's what we do know.
Okay.
This has to be something in the environment. This wasn't a genetic shift because it just has happened too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So something has changed in how we're living and what we're being exposed to. Here's just a few of the candidate factors that are being investigated. Increase in overweight and obesity, a decrease in how much exercise we get and how sedentary we are. A change in our fiber, higher fiber diet is better for colorectal cancer prevention, a decrease in intake of fruits and vegetables. There may be changes in what we call the microbiome, the bacteria that live in our gut due to change in antibiotic use over time. But we also recognize there may be other factors that have, as yet, have not been even discovered. This trend, and this actually has been going on for some time, but there was a critical paper published by the American Cancer Society, Becky Siegel, part of our team last year, showing that this effect is traveling with you your whole life. It's not just that you're at higher risk when you're in your 20s and 30s than you used to be. As you get older, in your 40s and 50s, you're still at higher risk as 40s and 50s-year-olds used to be. So it's what we call a birth cohort effect. It travels right with you, this higher risk, as you get older, based on everything we've seen so far. So there has been an intense concentration of interest. The National Cancer Institute is really focusing on this more now. We are focusing on it at ACS. So I'm not expecting an answer overnight, but I hope in the next few years we'll have a clearer idea.
So I think millennials now are paying attention, millennials who are listening, people born in the 80s and 90s. What should they do to make sure that their gut is clean?
You know, the very first thing to do, and unfortunately we're missing this opportunity, and it applies very much to people even in their teens and 20s, 30s, 40s, is to know your personal and family history. We found that roughly a third of people diagnosed before the age of 50 actually were at higher than average risk and didn't know it. So I tell everyone the process of reducing your risk of colorectal cancer begins in your teens and 20s. Find that relative who knows everybody in the family. They know, you know, what disease. I always say there's that Aunt Mildred out there somewhere.
Right,
you know,
right.
Who knows family history, but particularly your siblings and your parents. They're the most important impact on your family history. Find out not just a family history of cancer, but a family history even of polyps
mm-hmm.
that were found at a screen, for example, put you at higher risk. If you have inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, or ulcerative colitis, much higher risk, and you need to start to be monitored much earlier. The new guidelines we just issued, changing the screening age to 45, which I'll touch on in just a sec, are just for people at average risk. That's 80% of us who are at average risk. But that means 20% of us are at above average risk, and may need to start screening much earlier.
Okay, so now that brings me to insurance questions and doctor questions, because if a 35-year-old comes in and says, I need a colonoscopy or I need to get checked, however that is these days, then insurance often will say, you're too young, you don't fit the guidelines. And that 35-year-old has to do a lot to prove that, oh, no, my sister had polyps, my dad had polyps. What do you recommend here?
This is a particular challenge. I think for those people who have an underlying disease like Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, it's more straightforward,
right,
because it would be billed under that diagnosis. But you're going to need a partner if you do need a colonoscopy at 30 or 35 due to a strong family history. Your gastroenterologist or whoever's performing the colonoscopy is going to need to be your partner in this effort. They're going to need to provide documentation and what we call, you know, prior approval for this test. And it may be billed as what we call surveillance or high-risk screening, but it should be covered. The guidance statements that are out there about people at high risk are clear, but I wish I could give an easy message to everybody in the audience saying, oh, it'll be nothing to it, go right in. In fact, I'd probably say the reverse. If you are in that group and need to start early, make sure you ask your gastroenterologist. I want to be confident this is covered. I realize I may have a copay or a deductible, but I can't afford a couple thousand dollars for the full colonoscopy. So I think you have to be very proactive about it.
I mentioned other ways of figuring this out. There are places where you can send in your fecal matter and it can be analyzed.
Yes.
And people are touting this as instead of a colonoscopy. What do you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. We just published our new guideline, and the big story was that we moved the screening age for that 80% of us who are at average risk. We recommend now starting screening at 45, not at 50, due to this increasing risk in folks born more recently. But quite importantly, we recommend 6 tests, all of which we consider to be excellent equal choices. You may have heard the phrase colonoscopy is the gold standard. That's not something that we tout or promote or believe. We believe the best test is the one that gets done. And we, the United States Preventive Services Task Force and we have both included modeling that shows that if you stick to the regimen that is included for that test, you will prevent essentially the same number of colorectal cancer deaths as if you do colonoscopy. So there's a stool blood test that's inexpensive, $30 test, simple, that you can do in the privacy of your own home, mail it in. If it tests positive for blood, then you need a colonoscopy. So eventually all these tests result in colonoscopy if they're abnormal. But instead of direct to colonoscopy, you do another test first. And in this case of the stool blood test, only 5% will have a positive test. So instead of 100 out of 100 needing a colonoscopy, only 5 out of 100. Quite critically, though, if you do test positive on that test, do not pass go. Do not do anything until you get that colonoscopy, because now we know you're at quite high risk and you need to investigate it. There's a X-ray test called virtual colonoscopy. The better name is CT colonography. Very accurate. A lot of the good research done right there in the state of Wisconsin, by the way, which is we really appreciate. They were pioneers in this.
Right.
And it's very accurate, done every 5 years. There's an older test called flexible sigmoidoscopy, kind of the shorter version of colonoscopy. That's not being done much now, but it's done more in Europe. It's acceptable and perfectly good strategy. There's the test called Cologuard. That's the only brand name made, so that's why I use the brand name, which combines the stool blood test with a stool DNA test. That's once every 3 years, substantially more expensive. That's a $500 test, so you need to check your insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's quite accurate, and if it's positive, obviously you must go for colonoscopy. So there really are a menu of options. All of them are good. The best test is the one you get done.
So that's actually a really good way to say it. The best test is the one you get done. Don't leave it to be getting it done 5 years down the road. You say that colorectal cancers are on the rise. I'm kind of trying to get a sense of how prevalent they are in the population at large, even though they're rising.
Yes, you know, unfortunately, colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related death for when men and women are combined. You know, this is a cancer, obviously, that does not discriminate between men and women, unfortunately. It affects everybody. And that's why when you combine the two, it rises to the second leading cause of cancer-related death. About 135,000 cases diagnosed every year, and which is, you know, just think of those numbers in a decade. That's over a million people. And 50,000 people dying of colorectal cancer every year.
We will come back and talk about this more on the morning show. We're talking about rates of colon cancer with Dr. Richard Wender of the American Cancer Society. We'll be back in a moment. It's the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. The American Cancer Society just lowered its recommendation for colorectal screening from 50 to 45. Dr. Richard Wender is Chief Cancer Control Officer of the American Cancer Society, and he's been talking to us today about why. So, Dr. Wender, I want to throw this question out here. Carrie on Facebook, not me, some other person named Carrie, says, my sister was diagnosed with colon cancer 5 years ago at age 34. As a first-degree relative, I have had a colonoscopy already, and I'm 40. Early screening is key. Also, the medical community needs to stop putting off the complaints of people who are, quote, too young to have colon cancer, unquote. If my sister's complaints were taken seriously by her doctors at an earlier time, perhaps she wouldn't be fighting for her life right now. Cancer doesn't discriminate. So we talked earlier about insurance companies saying, oh, no, we're not going to pay for this. You're too young. But doctors have the same issues, yes?
They do, and Carrie, thanks so much for sharing that, because that's a story we're hearing all too often. And I have a very clear and simple message, not just to the public, but to all my colleagues and clinicians. And I am a primary care doc, so I'm a family doc. So, you know, this resonates in my daily work that I do clinically, which I still do a little bit of. And that is that colorectal cancer can occur at any age, including the teens, let alone the 20s and 30s. So there is no such thing as normal rectal bleeding. If you have rectal bleeding, that needs to be investigated. If you have belly pain that's persistent, change in your bowel habits, new constipation, diarrhea, or change in what the stool looks like, you're not feeling well persistently, weight loss certainly, these things need to be fully investigated to find a definitive explanation. And I should say, we did do carefully consider whether the screening age should be even younger than 45. Picking screening ages is always very, very difficult because some cases will always occur before the age that we pick. We know that. That's true for every cancer. Mm-hmm. But you have to pick the age where it balances the amount of screening that needs to be done with the benefit that the entire population will get. And so that's why the message for people younger than 45 must be know that family history, just as Carrie did, but also don't just accept symptoms as being normal, or I think I'm too young. And again, that message is just as true for clinicians as it is for the general public. Make sure that every one of these symptoms is fully investigated.
So the lesson here is listen to yourself, listen to your body, trust your instincts. And the lesson for clinicians is listen to your patients.
Well said. And again, this kind of fixed belief that you're just too young to get colorectal cancer, that needs to go away. Maybe it was never completely true, by the way, but it's certainly not true over these past few decades as we've seen this increase in risk of doubling risk of colon cancer and four times the risk of rectal cancer. The colon and rectum are connected, so we often use the term colorectal because they're, you know, one big part of your large intestine, your large bowel. But it's particularly high increased in rectal cancer in young people, including in the 20s. So, unfortunately, not only does this cancer affect both men and women, it can affect people of any age.
When you are diagnosing someone and you're trying to figure out why they have gotten colon cancer at such a young age, even especially if there's no family history, what kinds of questions are you asking them? Are you asking them about their food intake? Are you asking them about their laxative use? Is that part of the issue? Are you asking them about how much exercise they get? Is where they live in the country, does that matter?
I think once the diagnosis is made, most clinicians are focusing on treating that cancer.
Right.
We're doing a very large study now following 300,000 healthy people, none of whom had cancer at the start, and we're asking every one of those questions that you just mentioned, plus we have blood samples on all 300,000, and we're going to follow them for decades. So we hope with time this will help give us the answer as to whether your patterns of exercise, eating, laxative use, medications you take are playing a role. But frankly, I think the routine approach now is to focus more on the medical aspects. Having said that, we are looking for the presence of certain mutations, certain DNA abnormalities in tumors. And one of the considerations, for example, in Carrie's case, would be to consider genetic testing as a possibility. It certainly should at least be investigated when you have colorectal cancer that begins at a very young age in a family member.
You know, I have a friend whose both parents died of colon cancer, and one of her sisters had colon cancer, and the other sister had ovarian cancer, and she told me that they were related. Is that true?
It's very possible. There's a few well-known and well-described what we call genetic syndromes. They're inherited. They're passed from one family member down to the next. The two best known are what's called Lynch syndrome. Has another long name, hereditary non-polyposis colorectal cancer.
But I love science.
Known as Lynch syndrome, or something else called FAP, familial adenomatous polyposis. But what we're also learning is that families that carry the BRCA mutation, which in the past we just identified with breast and ovarian cancer, in fact, the BRCA mutation is associated with increased risk of many cancers. So when I hear colorectal and ovarian in the family, that's one of the things that that should be investigated. Clearly, that story with so much cancer in the family definitely warrants consultation with a genetic counselor.
So we talked about polyps before. What are polyps?
They are little bumps in your colon. They're growth. They look like a little, just a small little thumb, the beginning very tiny. They
right.
get bigger over time.
And are they necessarily carcinogenic?
No. In fact, the good news is that probably at most 1 out of 10 polyps develop into cancer. But it can be and there's quite a number of types of polyps, and some of those types actually almost never develop into cancer. We're mainly looking for a type called adenomas, and you may hear that term, adenoma. And even there are different types of adenoma. There's ones that tend to grow and stick out from the wall of the colon, some that are a little flatter, which are quite important to find as well, a little harder to find. The good news about colorectal cancer screening, and we haven't emphasized this till now, but I can't emphasize it enough, is that we are not just finding early colorectal cancer, we are preventing colorectal cancer, because almost every case develops from one of these precancerous polyps. So it's true, when we remove all the polyps we find at a colonoscopy, we don't try to guess which one might turn into cancer, we remove them all. But by doing that, we are seeing a decline in the risk of colorectal cancer in people older than 55. So it's really quite an interesting curve. We're seeing this increasing risk up in the pre-screening years, but then a decreasing risk in the post, once we start screening, because we're taking out these polyps, plus they're in those older cohorts. But here's this very concerning statistic. We're now seeing that in the 50 to 54-year-old group, which should already have started screening, the risk of colorectal cancer is going up, the risk of dying of colorectal cancer is going up, in part because people are not starting screening right at 50. Now we recommend they start at 45, but if you're already 50, approaching 50, don't wait. Get screened now.
We are talking about the increase in colorectal cancer among people who are younger than 50 years old. It's getting younger all the time, and actually millennials are at higher risk these days. We would like to hear from you. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org. That's where you can email us and tweet us at WPR Mornings. Richard, I want to talk about if you get a screening at 50 and they tell you, or 45 even, and they tell you you're good for 10 years. So if your screening is clear at 45, you don't have to worry?
Yes, a couple of things. I mentioned the six tests before that we recommend, any of which is a good one. They don't all occur at the same interval. So if you choose one of the two stool blood tests, you have to be, this is, again, another critical message that sometimes is missed. That's an annual test. That's something you do every year because of the way it works. It's an indirect sign of a large polyp or cancer, so you have to keep screening. So if you choose that stool blood test, $30 test, great choice, but recognize that you've made an annual commitment, doing something every year.
Will that stool test and that blood test find a polyp?
Yes, in fact, the most common finding when we do a colonoscopy with a positive stool blood test is a polyp, because some of these as the polyps get larger, they do shed a small microscopic amount of blood. So it's not quite a sense. It's not, you know, if you just compare one stool blood test to one colonoscopy, the colonoscopy is going to find a lot more polyps, and that's why you can spread it out to every 10 years because you're removing the little polyps in addition to the big ones.
Got it.
Whereas the stool blood test, we're mainly targeting those larger polyps or early cancers. That's why you have to keep going back every year. The Cologuard test, stool DNA blood test I mentioned earlier is every 3 years. The X-ray test every 5 years. So you have to know the right interval of testing. But if you do start with a colonoscopy, or if you started with a stool blood test and then got a colonoscopy that's normal, you're good to go, 10 years. And that's why a lot of people have been concerned in the academic community and the clinical community, are we going to be able to do all this screening for people, starting 5 years earlier? We're not reaching everybody now who's
right.
50 and over.
The
screening rates are only about 68%. And the good news is we do have the capacity to do it, but we have to do two things. One, use all of the screening options, not just colonoscopy for everybody. We've been emphasizing that for many years. That's not a new message. And we recommend offering choice to people so they can find the test that they prefer. But the second thing is just recognize it. Let's say you hit 45 at age 46, 47, you have a normal colonoscopy. Well, you're good then till 57. So that's why over a lifetime, moving the age earlier is only going to add 0 to 1 colonoscopy per person. Because if you started at 50, you would have been good to 60. If you started at 48, you're now good to 58. So it's not that many years different. The best evidence we looked at in our guideline is that we do have the capacity to do it. There's still too many missed opportunities to screen, and all of us have to make that commitment to get it done.
We have a lot of calls coming in. Jack from Burlington. Jack, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
What is your question or comment?
I'm kind of calling on behalf of my fiance. She's 30 years old. She's been having probably last 2-3 months a lot of like stomach issues, bloating and cramping and, 2 UTIs in a matter of 3 months, which was concerning. I was wondering if any of those symptoms have anything to do with the subject you're talking about.
Dr. Wender, first of all, can you tell us what a UTI is?
Sure, that's a urinary tract infection.
Okay,
which are quite common in women.
Right, and then what advice do you have for Jack and his fiance?
You know, one of the recommendations I give to everybody is persistent new symptoms that are a change from your usual. Carrie, you said it earlier: know your own body and listen to it. Have to be investigated. And young people, I think, at times are the most easily lulled into feeling like, I'm too young. You know, I can't develop anything serious at a young age. And we know that's not true. Those are not specific symptoms for any one disease, but they're the kinds of symptoms that can be due to many, many causes, some not too serious, just annoying, and others more serious. So number one is, if she hasn't already seen a physician, she needs to. And number two, if these symptoms are persisting, it's a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, then she does need a series of tests. And some may be an ultrasound to look at her pelvic organs, like her ovaries and her uterus, but a colonoscopy to see if it might be due to colon issues is also something to consider.
You know, that's one of the things that I think women question when they start having these kinds of symptoms. Is it my colon? Is it my ovaries? I mean, they're all in the same place. Which doctor should I go to?
You know, it's interesting. I kind of knew where you were going to go with that. And even as you asked it, I said, you know, it's not. That's a good question. And I think it's, I'm a family doc. And I really do believe that everyone, men and women, need a primary care clinician who takes comprehensive full body, full responsibility with you for your care, including preventive care, management of chronic problems like hypertension, evaluating symptoms. There's no one specialty who has a corner on that. Gynecologists can do that for women as long as the commitment is there to be that full-service primary care clinician. More commonly nowadays, gynecologists are focusing specifically on breasts and pelvic organs, not really managing blood pressure or doing full diagnostic workup. So I think you often need two clinicians, either a family doc alone who does your gynecologic care, or the combination of a family doc and a gynecologist, whichever you're most comfortable with. But it has to, somewhere in that team needs to be someone who's very comfortable doing full diagnostic workups, not just evaluating your pelvis, but also considering other organs like your colon.
When people come into you, you're looking for a wide range of things. What are the main questions that you're trying to find out from them when they come into you from a complaint? Is to stress play a role in this?
The first thing I do is the first thing we talked about, which is I make sure I understand the context they're living in, what was their family history. That can be a tremendous clue. These aren't in perfect order. The first thing I do is I want the story, and I always used to teach medical students when I did more of that. I said start from the beginning. Because patients will tend to come in and say, for 3 weeks I've had this symptom. And I always say, when's the very first time in your life you developed this symptom? It's a very different story when you say, well, to be honest with you, this is the fifth, sixth episode I've had since I was in my teens.
Right.
That's a very different story than say, I was perfectly fine until a month ago. That's a very different story. So I really try to get a comprehensive, full picture of what that experience has been like. That's the single most important issues of all. But then, beyond that, you also want to understand the context that people are living in. Unquestionably, the stresses we're facing do contribute to symptoms. That's good care. You need to understand it. As long as people realize that just because someone's under a lot of stress doesn't mean that the symptoms they're having are due to that stress. So you have to keep it's a challenge. It's picking.
We're going to have to take a break in a moment here. We're talking about the rising rates of colon cancer with Dr. Richard Wender of the American Cancer Society. It's the Ideas Network, and it is the morning show. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Dr. Richard Wender is with us talking about the high rates of colon cancer. Dr. Wender is a cancer control officer of the American Cancer Society. So, Dr. Wender, when we went to break, we were talking about people coming in and stress, how stress has to do with getting sick. I think you made a really good point that I want to pick up on. Stress does make us sicker, but a lot of times we will just write something off because, oh, we're stressed.
That's a great point. And one of the factors that we still don't understand as well as we need to is how stress doesn't just affect symptoms, but really does affect the organs of our bodies. So when I mentioned at the very top of the program that we are looking at causes of this increased risk, I would include the increased stresses of living as one of the potential candidates for explaining this rise. But I can't emphasize enough that it's so easy and tempting, particularly when you're young, to kind of just, oh my God, I'm going through so much, you know, that's why I don't feel well. And unfortunately that, or just it's unfortunate or unfortunate, just the reality. Sure, stress can affect how you feel, but there are also real disease. I mean, additional diseases. Stress is real too, but actual physical organ diseases that can be causing those symptoms. So don't just chalk things up to stress. Make sure they're checked out.
We have another question that came in. What if you've been eating poorly for years? That is a lot of us, actually, but want to improve your diet going forward to avoid colon cancer. Will that be effective, or is it too late?
We don't know the answer to that of you know, eating habits starting at what age, et cetera. And again, one of the things I've really encouraged all of us in the scientific community is not to just assume that our change in eating habits is the explanation for this shift to younger cases of colorectal cancer. I know many people, unfortunately, who have lived incredibly healthy lifestyles who are developing this disease at a young age. So it's important that we not just think that's the whole story. It's an easy answer for the person who asked this question. It's never too late to change.
Right.
That's an easy answer. And there's so many reasons why, not just colon cancer or rectal cancer, but for just how you're going to feel and the enjoyment that you get from life and bringing the pleasure back to eating, you know, rather than just eating as a habit or as a way to relieve stress. Exercising more, so self-reinforcing. You feel so good when you're doing that. It improves your joints. It improves your thinking. It's good for your heart. And there's some evidence that over time it will reduce your cancer risk, even if you start these habits quite late in life.
So let's take us through the screening process. What do you expect when you start screening people, and what are the signs? You know, we talked about bleeding. You know, if you are bleeding from your rectum, that's not good. In any case, go to the doctor. But what are the other things that people should be looking for?
Well, the first thing about the screening process is in this new guideline, actually, for the first time, we recommend that people be given a choice of screening tests. And if you're just going to give two choices, we'd say go to the opposite extremes, the simple take-home stool blood test that's inexpensive that you do every year, or the much more complex but very accurate colonoscopy that you do once every 10, recognizing that there are other good options as well, and I mentioned those earlier. But the more choice we give people, the more likely they are to get screened. The most important symptom is rectal bleeding, and again, there's no such thing as normal rectal bleeding. You need to find a full explanation for that, not just a hypothesis. A lot of people, it's hemorrhoids. In fact, hemorrhoids are pretty unusual in young people, and that's a mistake to attribute your rectal bleeding to hemorrhoids. One of the challenges of finding this disease is sometimes the symptoms are very subtle. You know, it's just, I just don't have the energy. I can't push myself as hard. And that's a symptom that's easy to dismiss.
Right, because that's just getting old, right?
You know, a lot of people will think that it's just, I have a colleague that I work with who spend a whole year just not quite, I'm just don't have my energy, and got screened at, they were 50 years old. They got a colonoscopy at age 50 at 364 days, and they had stage 2 colon cancer.
Oh, wow.
And the anemia, that the low blood count that is associated with that, is what was causing the symptoms all along. So just generally not feeling well. I mentioned any persistent abdominal pain, and we also use this term, so-called change in bowel habits. So new onset constipation that you didn't used to have, looser stools that you didn't used to have, thinner stools, they come out like pencils rather than what they used to look like. All those are things that you have to pay attention to.
We are talking about colorectal cancer and the rise in rates. 1-800-642-1234 is the number to call. Please call us and tell us your stories. You can also email us, email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Are precancerous, we have a question here, are precancerous lesions considered colon cancer? And what are the stages? You talked about stage 2. What are the stages, and what should we look for in those stages?
Yeah, here's the good news. When we find a polyp, we remove the polyp. You never developed cancer. That is not cancer.
Okay.
Absolutely not. And you know, I sometimes.
But get it taken out. If you have a precancerous lesion, get it taken out.
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
And when it's found at colonoscopy, it will be removed. That's one of the good things about getting that scope, is that we remove it right when we find it, which is terrific. And I always, you know, say you don't want to be being a colon cancer survivor is a life-changing experience. But being a polyp survivor is not. You know, you get that polyp removed and it's done, and you never have to hear the words that you have colorectal cancer. So that is not cancer, which is good. And then I missed it. What was the second question?
The second one is, what are the stages? You mentioned your colleague had stage 2.
So when we don't use the staging until the cells that we remove actually show cancer. And they... the earliest stage, stage 1, is cancer that's just found in the lump that, you know, the actual tumor that we saw in the colon and removed, which can often be removed through colonoscopy, although you need some surgery after that. If it's just sitting in that tumor and it has not penetrated down into the wall of the colon, that's an early stage, stage 1. Stage 2 is if it's penetrated, you know, the cells have grown into the wall of the colon. Stage 3 is as it goes through the wall and spreads into the lymph nodes right around that. And stage 4 is if it's advanced, you know, if it's spread beyond the colon and you have some cancer that's in your liver. The earlier we find it, the earlier the stage, the higher the cure rate. Stage 1 is almost 100% curable. Certainly at least 90%. So the goals of screening are both to prevent cancer by removing those cancerous polyps, but in some patients we find cancer early. I just talked to somebody yesterday, screening colonoscopy, when we found a stage 1 cancer, and they're very likely to be cured.
We have Josh from Oak Creek. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. So what is your question?
Well, I have a question. I have had adult intussusception since I was a child. At least that's what they think. And I know just from all the times that it's done what it does, my colon, that, and I've seen pictures of it, it leaves big old bruise rings about every 3 inches and about a foot and a half of my colon when it kaleidoscopes them. My question is, I haven't had a colonoscopy since all that started. I had one a long time ago when I was a kid, and I didn't find anything, actually. But in light of the screenings and all this and that, I know a colonoscopy can find an intussusception, but can the intussusception and all the bruising and all that, can that, have you seen that cause cancer in any of your screenings?
Yeah, great. It's a really interesting question, because we often think that anything that causes inflammation can affect cells. But the good news is I have never heard of intussusception being a risk factor for future colon cancer, colorectal cancer. How old are you now?
I'm 39.
39, yeah. And if you had no family history and if the intussusception was many years ago, I think you're good to go. I think you can start screening at 45.
Wow, good. I have a question. When people have IBF, which is on the rise, or at least more people are talking about having IBF?
IBS. Bowel syndrome.
Yes. Is that a precursor to colon cancer?
Great. You know, I always say the good news and bad news about irritable bowel syndrome. A colleague of mine used to say, the good news is you can live to be 100 years old with irritable bowel syndrome. The bad news is you can live to be 100 years old with irritable bowel syndrome. You know, it's a very annoying, difficult, it changes the quality of your life, and to have these persistent symptoms of bloating and change, you know, occasionally constipation, diarrhea, abdominal pain. And it needs to be fully evaluated. Do not assume it is irritable bowel syndrome, right. Particularly with this increase. But if nothing else is found and the diagnosis is irritable bowel syndrome, the good news is we have no evidence that increases your risk for colorectal cancer. So it really is a good news, bad news story. It's an unpleasant problem to have, and it can affect the quality of your life, but it does not raise your risk of life-threatening illness.
So we have 1 minute left. Talk to me about what we're doing in the future to cure this cancer. Is it just a matter of better screenings and get on the ball and do that, or are we finding what is actually causing colon cancer?
Yeah, you know that we must invest more in these studies of what the underlying causes are of colorectal cancer, and I expect a lot more investment in the years to come. Know your risk, know your family history. Depending on that risk, or if your average risk, start screening at 45. If you have symptoms, get checked. And then if you do have colorectal cancer, make sure that you follow through with all of your treatments and get the care, because we're doing a lot better in treating the disease as well.
We have been talking to Dr. Richard Wender from the American Cancer Society. He is the Chief Cancer Control Officer. He is also a clinician himself, and so he sees a lot of patients with these symptoms. Dr. Wender, thank you for joining us today. Coming up tomorrow at this time, we explore Wisconsin bike trails and rides as part of Wisconsin Bike Week. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Ideas Network.